व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो टू चैप्टर टेन। भागवतम इज द आंसर टू ऑल क्वेश्चंस। टेक्स्ट 11 एंड 12। 12 इज अप ऑन द बोर्ड, सो आई विल चैंट 11 ओनली माई सेल्फ। तास्ववात्सीत् स्वसृष्टासु सहस्रं परिवत्सरान् तेन नारायणो नाम यदापह पुरुषोद्भवाः। द सुप्रीम पर्सन इज नॉट इम्पर्सनल एंड देयरफॉर इज डिस्टिंक्टिवली अ नर और अ पर्सन। देयरफॉर द ट्रांसेंडेंटल वाटर क्रिएटेड फ्रॉम द सुप्रीम नर इज नोन एज नर नार एंड बिकॉज ही लाइज डाउन इन दैट वाटर ही इज नोन एज नारायण। Text 12. Dravyam karma cha kalaha cha svabhavaha jivaha eva cha yat anugrahataha santi na संति यत उपेक्षया। द्रव्यं कर्म च कालश्च स्वभावो जीव एव च यदनुग्रहतः संति न संति यत उपेक्षया। द्रव्यं कर्म च कालश्च स्वभावो जीव एव च यद् अनुग्रहतः सन्ति न सन्ति यदुपेक्षया। द्रव्यं कर्म च कालश्च स्वभावो जीव एव च यद् अनुग्रहतः सन्ति न सन्ति यदुपेक्षया। Touches. द्रव्यम फिजिकल एलिमेंट्स, कर्म एक्शन, च एंड Kalaha, time. Cha, also. Svabhavaha, jivaha. The living entities. Eva, certainly. Cha, also. Yat, whose. Anugrahataha, by the mercy of. Santi, exist. Na, does not. Santi, exist. Yat upekshaya, by negligence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. One should definitely know that all material ingredients, activities, time and modes, and the living entities who are meant to enjoy them all, exist by His mercy only. And as soon as He does not care for them, everything becomes non-existent. Purport. The living entities are the enjoyers of the material ingredients, time, modes, etc., because they want to lord it over material nature. The Lord is a supreme enjoyer, and the living entities are meant to assist the Lord in His enjoyment and thus participate in the transcendental enjoyment of everyone. The enjoyer and the enjoyed both participate in enjoyment, but deluded by the illusory energy, the living entities want to become the enjoyer like the Lord, although they are not meant for such enjoyment. The jivas, the living entities, are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita as the Lord's superior nature, or para prakriti, and so also it is mentioned in the Vishnu Purana. Therefore, the living entities are never the purushas or the factual enjoyers. As such, the spirit of enjoyment by the living entity in the material world is false. In the spiritual world, the living entities are pure in nature, and therefore they are associates in the enjoyment of the Supreme Lord. In the material world, the spirit of enjoyment of the living entities, by dint of their own actions, karma, gradually fades by the laws of nature. And thus the illusory energy dictates in the ears of the conditioned souls that they should become one with the Lord. This is the last snare of the illusory energy. When the last illusion is also cleared off by the mercy of the Lord, the living entity again becomes reinstated in his original position and thus becomes actually liberated. For this attainment of liberation from the material clutches, the Lord creates the material world, maintains it for some time, 1,000 years of His measurement, as stated in the previous verse, and then annihilates it by His will. The living entities are therefore completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, and all their so-called enjoyments by scientific improvement are crushed into dust when the Lord desires. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, Shukadev Goswami is continuing with the description of the creation process. It's a very difficult process to understand and conceive in our limited capacity of intelligence, etc. In the other two temples in Bengaluru, where I was before, by coincidence, the broad subject under discussion in the morning classes has been creation. So although in the other two temples it was a third canto, here it is a second canto, but the subject has been creation. So in one of them I was mentioning how, or was it yesterday only? Yesterday itself, we were mentioning that ultimately of all the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the ashrayaha, the ultimate, the summum bonum, that is Sri Krishna, who is the most important factor in the consideration of any of these 10 categories. Because he is a source of all the other 9, and it is because of him that all the other 9 happen in the first place. So it is most important, therefore, to know Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the scientists, as Srila Prabhupada has explained in various places, are more interested in knowing the emanation rather than the source of the emanation. In the previous verse, it has been described that the Lord appears as Mahavishnu, and from him emanate the numerous universes, and then he expands himself into as many forms as there are universes. Each of these forms enter into each universe, fill up half the universe with water from his own body, and then the Lord lies down in that body. And therefore he is called Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu. Now in continuation of that, in the 11th verse here, the word Narayana is being defined. Why is the Lord called Narayana? Having described that the Lord enters into the universe, creates the water, lies down in that water, the water becomes a resting place of Narayana. Therefore, Narayana is one for whom the resting place is the water. The 11th verse says, Tasu, Tasu meaning in that universe or in that water. Avatsi, it means resided. And for 1,000 of his own years, the Lord resided there. So Prabhupada in the translation says, a Supreme Person is not impersonal and therefore is distinctively a Nara. Nara means a person. Therefore the transcendental water created from the Supreme Nara is known as Nara. And because he lies down in that water, he is known as Narayana. So one whose resting place is the Nara. The Nara refers to the water that emanates from Nara, the Supreme Person. And since that is the resting place of this Supreme Personality, he is also called Narayana. Now this is an interesting term, Narayana. In the Smritis, there is another similar definition. But it says that Nara also refers to the water that emanates from Nara, and Ayana also refers to not just resting place but also means supreme shelter. So Narayana is that person who is the supreme shelter of the water that emanates from him. Like that. Do you follow? So this is how the Smritis explain the word Narayana also. In the Smritis, another definition of Narayana is given. Nara is a supreme person. Naran refers to all the truths that emanate from Nara. And Ayana means a supreme shelter. So Narayana is he who is the supreme shelter of all truths. This is of course a topic in itself, scope for a lecture in itself, but we will not go further into this. Then interestingly, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as you are aware, has written extensive purports, and he has translated every verse from the Chaitanya Bhagavat and written long purports on many of the verses. So in one of those purports, he gives many meanings of the word Narayana, as is given by the great commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Sridhar Swami, in his celebrated commentary called Bhavartha Deepika. And Sridhar Swami says as follows. He says, the word Nara refers to the aggregate of all living entities, the totality of living entities is called Nara. So Ayana refers to supreme shelter. So the word Narayana means he who is a supreme shelter of the aggregate of all living entities. This is Narayana. Again, Sridhar Swami explains that the word Ayana can also refer to propensities. And Nara again refers to the totality of all the living entities. So Narayana is who? Is he from whom the propensities of all living entities emanate? We have heard Srila Prabhupada explain many times that all the tendencies that we have, like getting angry, the desire to play, the desire to enjoy, etc., all these tendencies and propensities exist in us because they exist in the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is our source. There can be nothing that exists in the world that does not exist in Him, because He is the origin of everything. And therefore, we can have anger only because the Lord has anger. We have a tendency to fight, unfortunately too much, because the Lord also has the tendency to fight. He enjoys a vira rasa. So we have all the tendencies that we have, the propensities that we have, exist in us because they exist in our origin, in our source, the Supreme Lord. So therefore, He is the origin of all the propensities of the living entities. Sridhar Swami gives another meaning to the word Ayana, as meaning knowing or to know. And Nara means the aggregate of the living entities. So he who knows all living entities is called Narayana. Nobody else can know all living entities, because the Supreme Lord knows directly and indirectly everything and everyone. Janmadasyatanvayad itaratas charthishva abhigyah swarat. So he is abhigyah, means he knows everything directly and indirectly. Our knowledge is first of all very limited. So our knowledge is very direct, is very limited, and it is, and a direct knowledge is also limited to just our own body. For example, if I have a stomachache, only I know that I have a stomachache. I can feel it, but you cannot feel my stomachache. I may tell you I have a stomachache and you may try to sympathize with me or give me a medicine, but actually the feeling only I can have. So my experience of my body is only direct, to some degree indirect. But I do not have knowledge of your body. I do not have knowledge of what is going on beyond. Whereas the Supreme Lord, being situated in the heart of every living entity, knows everything and everyone directly and indirectly. Again, this is a big topic. Each of these points is a topic in itself for a class. So in any case, so Sridhar Swami's third definition of Narayana is that it is he who knows all living entities. Also, another meaning that he gives is that when the Supreme Lord, again, can be considered as he is Naran, he is the Nara, he is the original person. So the personality in whom all these truths reside, from whom all these truths emanate, is Narayana. Where is this coming from? Okay. Okay, so these are some of the different narrations or the meanings of the word Narayana given. And in this 11th verse, a very basic, simple definition: the transcendental water created from the Supreme Nara is known as Nara, and because he lies down on that water, he is known as Narayana. Now this Narayana, it is from him that the entire creation within the universe begins, because he lies down as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu in the Garbhodaka ocean, and from his navel emanates the lotus. In that lotus, on the top of it, Brahma, the creator, is born. And then Brahma, being empowered by the Lord, after Brahma goes into a period of austerity and penance, then creates the different planetary systems. He creates a facility for the 8.4 million species of life, and he allots them the different places of residence. He creates these different grades of existence according to planets, according to karma, according to species, etc. So this is how the whole creation is organized, in a very step-by-step fashion, very systematically, wherein the Supreme Lord engages all his agents, who are his devotees, or in some cases they may be his personal expansions. So the whole creation process is happening only by the will of the Lord, under the supervision and arrangement of the Lord. Nothing can go even an atomic fraction away from the plan of the Lord. And all his agents, whether they are jivas or whether they are his empowered expansions, they all act cooperatively to make this creation process happen. It is a most extraordinary, miraculous kind of event for us, not for the Lord. For the Lord, this is just something natural. Svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. For him, it is just very natural. Because parasishaktir vividhaiva shruyate, because he has variegated innumerable energies ever at his disposal, to at his beck and call, to fulfill his every desire. Therefore, the creation process may seem extraordinarily complicated and difficult for us, which indeed it is, but for the Lord, it is just a very simple matter. We cannot even begin to conceive. So those who take a materialistic approach, like the modern scientists, who try to understand the whole creation simply by their material analysis or their material research, which is ultimately based purely on sensory perception and has no connection with the 10th topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Ashraya, Krishna, the source of everything, such attempts therefore are always doomed to failure. In the 12th verse, Shukadev Goswami then says that all these items, dravya refers to the material ingredients, meaning the five mahabhutas, the five karmendriyas, five jnanendriyas, the five tanmatras, mind, intelligence, ego, the pradhana, which is the unmanifest material nature. So all these things exist only by his mercy, including time factor. And as soon as he does not care for them, the translation goes, everything becomes non-existent. So you see, the whole creation, everything in existence is based on desire. The creation is based on not only the Lord's desire, but also the Jiva's desire. And this is explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to this verse, wherein he says that actually the living entities in the material world are not enjoyers of this world, but they only imagine themselves to be enjoyers. And therefore they are sometimes known as Purusha. Purusha means enjoyer. Prakriti is that which is enjoyed. Purusha is only the Supreme Lord. But when the Prakriti tries to falsely become a Purusha, then he is sometimes also referred to as Purusha. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna explains, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhungte Prakriti Jair Guneir Karanam Gunasangosya Sadasat Yoni Janmasu. The Jivas in the material world falsely try to lord it over the material nature and become enjoyers. Prakriti sthahi, they are situated in Prakriti. Purushaha, Prakriti sthahi, being situated in the Prakriti, bhunkte Prakriti jair guneir. Being situated in Prakriti, they try to enjoy that Prakriti. They try to lord it over the resources of material nature. And therefore, karanam gunasangosya sadasat yoni janmasu. Therefore, they are forced by the laws of nature to take birth again and again, sometimes in the higher species of life, sometimes in the lower species of life, and this goes on and on and on. However, when the false Purusha realizes that he is actually only the false Purusha, there is actually Prakriti, and he starts serving the Lord and works only for the pleasure and the enjoyment of the Lord, then he enjoys. When the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita describes Bhumirapa Nalavayukham Manobuddhirevacha Ahankariti Yamme Bhinna Prakriti Rashtadha, he talks about the Ashtadha Prakriti, the eightfold material nature. And then in the next verse he describes the nature of the spiritual living entity. Apareya mitaspanyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhuta mahabhaho yayedam dharyate jagat. So apart from this material prakriti, O Arjuna, there is a spiritual prakriti. And that is para prakriti. The material nature is called apara prakriti, and the spiritual prakriti, that is the jiva or the soul, is called para prakriti. So very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has described the jiva as the Purusha. Or for the enjoyment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When that does not happen, the living entity suffers. Prabhupada explains here very importantly, the living entities are meant to assist the Lord in his enjoyment, and thus participate in the transcendental enjoyment of everyone. The enjoyer and the enjoyed both participate in enjoyment. Now, the mistake that the living entity makes is that he tries to think that he can enjoy only by trying to be the enjoyer. He doesn't realize that there is a higher enjoyment available if he simply tries to serve the real enjoyer. And he submits himself for being enjoyed by the real enjoyer. The enjoyer and the enjoyed both participate in enjoyment, Prabhupada says. But deluded by the illusory energy, the living entities want to become the enjoyer like the Lord, although they are not meant for such enjoyment. So this is a fundamental point. Real enjoyment comes not from wanting to be the enjoyer and the Lord, but real enjoyment comes from serving the Supreme Enjoyer. The one who is assisting or serving the Lord to enjoy, enjoys greatly. The enjoyment process is partaken of by both. The Supreme Lord is the ultimate enjoyer and the jiva who tries to give enjoyment to the Lord. In fact, the jiva in the pure state of Krishna consciousness enjoys even more than the Lord. And that is why we have the appearance of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srimati Radharani is the original internal energy, the blissful potency of Krishna. And Srimati Radharani enjoys service to Krishna in such a way that even Krishna cannot understand it. And therefore Krishna is puzzled. The all-knowing Krishna cannot understand what kind of enjoyment it is that Srimati Radharani experiences. What is the nature of that happiness she feels? What is the quality of that love that she has for him? And therefore he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he understands that the one who is serving him is enjoying more than he himself. So the enjoyer doesn't enjoy more than the person who serves the enjoyer. The person who serves the enjoyer actually enjoys more. As is evident from this instance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this principle is demonstrated by the very fact that the Lord exists as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's existence is the proof for this one statement, that the one who serves the Supreme Enjoyer enjoys more than the enjoyer himself. You have all heard in South India of Vatapatrashayi Bhagavan, yes? Who is Vatapatrashayi Bhagavan? Can anyone say? Yes. The Supreme Lord, Vatasya Patrasya Jaleshayanam Balam Mukundam Manasasmarami. So the Supreme Lord in the form of a child and a baby lies in the water of devastation when the pralaya happens on the earth, and he lies down on the leaf of Vatapatra. And as he's lying down on that, floating on the ocean of devastation, the pose in which he is that he's sucking the toe. Kararvindena padarvindam. You know? So he is holding his toe and he's sucking it. Mukharvindena vinveshayantam. So then he is holding it to his mouth and he's sucking his own toe. And sometimes this is called Ugra Krishna also. Not because the form of Krishna is Ugra. He is a very sweet form of Krishna. He is a childhood form of Krishna. But because this happens at the time of pralaya, when everything is very terrible, devastation happens everywhere. Water floods the whole planet. So at that time, he lies there. And this is the form that Markandeya Rishi saw when he prayed to Krishna to see his illusory energy. The Supreme Lord smiled to himself and said, well, you may regret it. You're asking for it, but you don't know what you're asking for. But anyway, because that was the desire of Markandeya Rishi, the Lord fulfilled it. Markandeya Rishi was sitting in his ashram, and then all of a sudden he found that the waters were rising everywhere. And the waters rose to such a degree that the whole earth was submerged. Even the mountains could not be seen. There was only water everywhere. And Markandeya Rishi for a long, long time was floating and swimming in this water. He was exhausted, but he was not dying. He was just going on and on and on. This went on for many, many, many years. And finally, one time when he was swimming and swimming in the water, in the distance he could see something. As he went closer, he was astonished to see that this was actually a small child, a baby. extremely beautiful looking, with a bluish dark complexion, who was lying on the leaf of a banyan tree, and he was sucking his toe, and then occasionally he was removing the toe and smiling at Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi became so attracted to him, he rushed to embrace him. And the moment he rushed forward, he got drawn into the nostrils of that child. And it went into the inside of the body of that child. And within the child's body, he saw the entire universe. He saw all the planetary systems. He saw the earth planet with its mountains and rivers and oceans. And he saw himself. And then as he was marveling at this wonderful sight, once again, by the outward breathing of the child, he came out again into the water. And then he found himself sitting in his ashram, as he was before. So this was an extraordinary display of how the material energy works, specifically given to Markandeya Rishi by the arrangement of the Lord. So this Vatapatra Shai is, Shai means one who sleeps. Patra means leaf. Vata refers to the Vata Vriksha, the banyan tree, or the family. So why does the Supreme Lord suck his own toe? You see, because as far as the devotees are concerned, and the Bhagavatam confirms this everywhere, that the Supreme Lord, the devotees of the Supreme Lord are like honeybees. Bees like to go around where there is honey. So because the Supreme Lord, his lotus feet are like honey, so the devotees are always wandering around the lotus feet of the Lord. And they can never leave the lotus feet of the Lord. They are so strongly attracted. So the Lord is also curious to know, why are these devotees attracted to my feet? What is it about my feet that gives them so much enjoyment? They are enjoying more than me. I am not getting this kind of happiness. So I also want to know what it is that they are seeing in my feet. Let me also taste my feet and see what is the nectar that they get in my feet. But naturally, as a grown-up, he can't do that. Can you imagine if some grown-up starts sucking his own toe? That is going to look really embarrassing and awkward. And it is not quite appropriate. But for a newly born child, for a baby, it's something very natural. All children will do that. They will take their, suck their thumbs. They will take their toe. The body is very flexible. So they will take their own toe and suck it. So then Krishna takes the form of a baby, of a child, and he sucks his own toe to try to find out what is the nectar in my feet. So the beginning of research work started with Krishna. Now all forms of research that go on in laboratories, etc., are perverted forms of that original research work of Krishna. And Krishna's subject of research is, what is the topic? What is there in the lotus feet that is so nectarian? What taste is it that they find? So he's experimenting. So he sucks his own toe and he's still trying to figure out. So we can understand that the Lord also accepts that my devotees are enjoying more than me. Why do they enjoy more than me? Because the only thing they know is that I want to give Krishna happiness. I want to serve Krishna for his pleasure. That is why they enjoy a greater degree of happiness than Krishna himself. But those who try to be happy by independently enjoying, they are forced to come into this material world and have to suffer again and again. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada concludes that one should give up such false enjoyment. However, he gives a parting paragraph, a sub-paragraph, where he says that some people decide that this enjoyment is illusory, therefore I will give it up, but then I will try to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and become one with the Lord. And Prabhupada says that is the last snare of the illusory energy. It is only when the living entity transcends even this illusion that I am God or I can be one with God by merging into Him, when he rises beyond that, then he can actually be situated in the position of true liberation. As we mentioned yesterday morning, Muktir Hitvan Yatharupam Swarupena Vyavasthitihi. So the constitutional position of the living entity is that he is eternally a servant of Krishna. And in that position, he is also considered liberated, even if he still is within this body. Iha yasya harir dasya karmana manasagira nikhilashvapyavasthasu jivan muktah sa uchyate. So a person whose mind, body and words are completely devoted to the service of Lord Hari or Lord Krishna, that person is considered to be liberated even though within this body, in this world. So that is our conception of liberation as given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Our concept of liberation is not that we should merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, but rather that we should be situated in unalloyed, pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord with only one desire, that is to give pleasure to Krishna. We all know the story of how Krishna once had a headache, and Krishna actually wanted to teach Narad Muni the glory of the devotion of the gopis for him. And when Narad Muni tried so many such treatments, he even brought him here to Bangalore, took him to various treatment centers, but there was no relief for Krishna's headache. And Krishna said, the only cure for this is the dust from the lotus feet of my devotees. Narad Muni, please give me the dust from your feet. And Narad said, oh, how can I do that? You are the Lord, I am your servant. I cannot give you the dust from my feet for your head. I should do the act. I should take the dust from your lotus feet and put it on my head. So many devotees were asked, but they all were horrified at the very thought of it. And then Krishna said, go and ask the gopis of Vrindavan. So then Narad Muni went, and the gopis immediately gave so much of dust from their own feet in buckets they filled up, take as much as you want. And Narad Muni was aghast, and he said, don't you realize the consequences of this? That you will go to hell eternally? And they said, yes, if it gives Krishna relief for even one moment from his headache, then it will give us great happiness. We are satisfied with that. That is the attitude that makes the gopis the highest devotees in all of creation. And that is why the intensity of the prema that they feel is also unparalleled and incomparable. Ramya kachid upasana vrajavadhu vargena ya kalpita. So the standard of bhakti as exhibited by the gopis of Vrindavan is the topmost. It is because they have absolutely no desire for their own enjoyment, but they simply want to give enjoyment to Krishna. And therefore, paradoxically, they enjoy the highest grade of devotional bliss, culminating in the Mahabhava of Srimati Radharani, who is the personified Ladini Shakti. So our goal, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us, is to follow in the footsteps of these exalted residents of Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu identified himself as Gopi Bhartuh Padakamalayor Dasa Dasanu Dasaha. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes. 1 minute. The mic is coming to you.
Enjoyer and enjoyed.
Yes.
But the enjoyer is truly the Supreme Lord alone. But the fact remains that the individual also has a contribution in that enjoyment. He has a participation in that enjoyment. And how is it actually happening? That is the first part of the question. The second thing is
that... Okay, we'll come to that first. So I'll read again the part of the purport that I had read out. The Lord is a supreme enjoyer, and the living entities are meant to assist the Lord in his enjoyment, and thus participate in the transcendental enjoyment of everyone. The enjoyer and the enjoyed both participate in enjoyment. But deluded by the illusory energy, the living entities want to become the enjoyer like the Lord, although they are not meant for such enjoyment. So that answers your question. That the enjoyer and the enjoyed both participate in the enjoyment process. And I further elaborated on that by saying that actually it is the enjoyed who enjoys more than the enjoyer in this transcendental process. Okay? Your second question?
When you gave the definition of Narayana, Narayana, which means that he is all-knowing and directly and indirectly also, which means that whatever that experience that the Purusha, that is a Jiva, is going through, should be accessible even for the Supreme Lord also. So,
meaning what should be accessible for the Supreme Lord?
Whatever that particular experience that individual Jiva is going through should be accessible for the Supreme Lord also. So how is there a disconnection? There cannot be a missing link for the Supreme Lord having been the total
controller. Your question is that if the individual living entity is going through some experience of pleasure or whatever it is in the material world, then the Supreme Lord also must have knowledge of that. Yes? Most certainly. In fact, the Supreme Lord is present as the next door neighbor of the soul in the region of the heart. And he is constantly accompanying the Jiva in all his lifetimes during his stay in the material world. Therefore, the Lord is first of all undergoing the experiences that the living entity undergoes. Nothing that the living entity experiences, pleasurable or painful, is not experienced by the Lord. It is not possible. The Lord is the original experiencer of everything. So everything we experience is also experienced by the Lord. And it is only because the Lord facilitates our experience that we are able to experience. Otherwise, we will not even be able to experience that. That is why it was mentioned that the Lord is directly and indirectly all-knowing. Veda aham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyani jabhutani mam tu vedana kaschana. Krishna says, I know past, present, future of everything, everyone. I know all living entities, but no one knows me. Mam tu veda na kaschana. So when Krishna says that I know all living entities, he means that he knows everything about the living entities, past, present and future, including what experiences they have had, what experiences they are having, and also the future. Otherwise he cannot be the omniscient Supreme Lord.
So he being the omniscient and the omnipotent, where is the necessity for him to take an avatar to know the moods of Srimati Radhika when he is all-knowing by himself?
In this one matter, his all-knowing nature fails. You see, there are two aspects in Krishna consciousness. One is called tattva. Tattva means the truth, or what we could call in technically in English language, ontology. Ontology means the existence of the reality of things. So in tattva, Krishna is all-knowing. And that's a fact. But in rasa, or in leela, Krishna can sometimes be unaware. That is to nourish the rasa, to nourish the sweet taste of his pastimes. So, His Leela Shakti, for example, in Vrindavan, will cover Krishna's mind, will cover Krishna's knowledge of himself as God. Now, this is a very important concept. In Vrindavan, all the devotees do not understand Krishna to be God. And even when sometimes they are aware, that awareness of Krishna's godhood does not interfere with the sweetness and the intimacy of their relationship with Krishna. It does not make them cease to believe that Krishna is their friend or Krishna is their son and so on. So the yogamaya energy of Krishna covers these devotees, and so that they do not recognize the ontological position of Krishna. They do not understand the tattva of Krishna. Because the rasa predominates. Because rasa is more important in Vrindavan than tattva. And not only are the eyes of the devotees covered by this, even Krishna's own eyes are covered. Not by Yogamaya, but by his Leela Shakti. You could say Yogamaya too. So Krishna's Leela, this is the conclusion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. That the Leela Shakti of the Lord covers Krishna's own knowledge of himself as the Supreme Lord. And therefore he explains in a very significant purport of the Damodar Leela that was Krishna really afraid when Mother Yashoda was chasing him with a stick and when she was binding him? What is the answer? How can the Supreme Lord be afraid? Yes? If the Supreme Lord knows that he's supreme, he's all-powerful, why should he be afraid? So Krishna, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, actually forgets, does not realize that he is God. And he actually becomes afraid of his mother. It is not that he's play-acting. If he's play-acting, Kunti Maharani would not have spoken those particular verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 8th chapter. So, in this way, Krishna's rasa predominates in Vrindavan over tattva. So, there are times when Krishna doesn't know and he doesn't like to know. You see, everybody else wants to be God except Krishna. So, that creates a peculiar problem. We are here in the material world and we are play-acting false God. And in Vrindavan, Krishna says, God, 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 everybody comes to me, God, give me this, God, give me that. Now I'll take such a role, well, I'm going to ask my parents, you give me this, you give me this. So Krishna likes to play pastimes in which he's not God. But he can't change the fact that he's God. So he arranges that he forgets that he is God during these pastimes. And because it is rasa that overwhelms the tattva. So both are simultaneously true. Krishna is all-knowing and therefore he knows everything in tattva, and yet in rasa there are certain things he doesn't know. And that is meant for the nourishment of his own enjoyment and the enjoyment of his devotees. Okay.
Now, does it not justify or vindicate the Advaitic school of thought wherein they say everything in this universe is subservient of Maya Shakti?
No, it is not. Because what the Advaitins say is that they are speaking in terms of ontology, not in terms of rasa. They are speaking in terms of tattva. In tattva, we are very clear. Maya chatad apashrayam. The Bhagavatam clearly says. The Bhagavad Gita says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti hisuyate sacharacharam, etc. So the mistake that the Advaitins make is that they consider this covering of the Supreme Lord by Maya to be part of tattva. Whereas as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we understand that is not the case. In tattva, Krishna can never be under any illusion. but merely to facilitate his own pastimes, he himself does that. Secondly, the Advaitins believe that we as individual living entities are also under Maya, are the Supreme Lord. But how can the Supreme Lord be under this kind of Maya where he suffers birth, death, old age and disease? Krishna, when he covers his own knowledge of his own godhood, does not suffer pangs of birth, death, old age and disease like we do. They are talking about, the Advaitins are talking about the living entity covered by Mahamaya. Whereas we are speaking about the Supreme Lord being covered by his Leela Shakti, which is a transcendental energy. And they speak about the living entity being covered by the material energy. So there is a big difference between these two.
So for a person who is aspiring to be a devotee, how does he has to conduct himself in his attitude and mood with respect to a person who is actually doing everything in service of the Lord?
You see, the whole story is we have to move from one stage of unawareness of Krishna's godhood to another stage of unawareness of Krishna's godhood. When we are in ignorance, before we come to Krishna consciousness, we don't know Krishna is God, right? Before we came to Krishna consciousness, we were all confused. Who is Krishna? Who is God? We don't know. But once we come to Krishna consciousness, then we realize, oh, Krishna is God. So we came from a state of not knowing Krishna's godhood because we were in Mahamaya. Now we are in the intervening stage. We come to the stage of understanding who is Krishna. We develop some faith. We start serving Krishna. We develop some taste for that service. Our devotion for him grows. And this continues on and on and on and on progressively. And we follow according to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. In the mood of Vrindavan, we want to serve Krishna. And eventually the culmination of this will be that we will become pure devotees one day. And then we will be transferred to Goloka Vrindavan after we leave this world. And in Goloka Vrindavan, then like the other Brajabasis, we will not realize Krishna's godhood. But that not realizing of Krishna's godhood is under Yogamaya. This ignorance of Krishna's godhood at this extreme is under Mahamaya, and that ignorance of Krishna's godhood is under Yogamaya. So we have to move from this ignorance to that ignorance. But that ignorance is sublime, supreme. And to reach that higher ignorance, you have to go through this whole process. Sit and chant the rounds, hear Bhagavatam, hear Bhagavad Gita. Of course, these activities will continue in Goloka Vrindavan as well, where there's 24 hours glorification of Krishna going on.
But in the existential position as I am today, there is an ample amount of enjoyment an individual goes through in any of the sense perceptions. And should he have to live in a mode of denial, or even if he does everything saying that I'm doing it only for the pleasure of the Lord, there is an amount of deception there. How do we reason it out?
No, we cannot individually try to enjoy this material world and say I'm doing it for Krishna. There is an authorized process for giving pleasure to Krishna. What can be offered to Krishna? What cannot be offered to Krishna? What is the process by which Krishna is pleased? So according to the teachings of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, we have to live our life. And if we do that, then Krishna is pleased. But if we independently or whimsically try to enjoy this world and think that therefore Krishna is pleased by that, that is not the fact. That is simply Mahamaya. And that will make us take birth again and again in this material world.
I'm not in my individual capacity to restrain the force of Mahamaya on me. And I'm just helpless to that situation. So how do I have a freedom in that particular aspect?
By association of devotees. The free will must be exercised to associate with devotees. It is according to the accumulation of unknowingly performed devotional service over many lifetimes that one gets the opportunity to associate with devotees. Then we use our free will to seriously associate with devotees and participate in the ninefold devotional processes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. And by doing that, gradually we will overcome the force of Mahamaya. We are under the clutches of Mahamaya, but when we surrender to Krishna, then we become released. Krishna orders Mahamaya, you release this devotee. Now this devotee has come to my shelter. Just as a king can tell the warden of the prison, okay, you release this prisoner now. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. It is only by the process of surrendering to Krishna that we can overcome the bondage of Mahamaya. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. One question here. Are you a professor? Yes? Your questions are very intellectual. Very nice. Thank you for your nice questions. Yes.
Maharaj, it's in relation with the previous question which was going on. So, whatever we hear, okay, in Krishna consciousness, in the class or everything, is against whatever we are doing in our day-to-day life. Exactly opposite. Whether it's in work, home or anywhere, it's completely 180 degrees. We are taught how to lord over, how to manage, how to make sure the other person is surrendered to us than we surrendering. So it's like completely contrary to what we hear. We hear something, we do something else in the outside world. So how do we actually conduct our life in such a way in this complex situation? Because outside it's completely 180 degrees to what we hear.
When Arjuna was fighting, was he fighting with the intention that he wanted to surrender to the enemy, or he wanted the enemy to surrender to him? To me. He wanted to defeat the Kauravas. Right? So he didn't go with the intention that I'm a devotee of Krishna, so I will just go folded hands. Right? Because at that time he was doing a duty. A duty that was ordained by Krishna personally to him. You go and fight. Fight for dharma. So when you're fighting like that, then you have to be of the mindset that the other person has to surrender to me. Not out of ego, but out of a sense of service to Krishna, because that is what Krishna wants. Now, if in our day-to-day life, you are the boss in a particular company, let us say, you have subordinates under you. So you have to make them surrender, not in an egoistic kind of way that I am the boss and you must surrender to me. But there is a system in this world that nothing can happen without a hierarchy. Someone has to be the leader, and to tell others what to do, he has to decide who should do what. Without that, there will be chaos. As I said, in the whole creation process of the universe, step by step, Krishna has such perfect organization. He has different agents of his participating at different levels. Each has the prescribed duties. Everything is being organized, supervised, monitored. So that is your role if you are the boss in the office. So you have to be the boss in this spirit. Not in the spirit that I want to nourish my false ego. Because it is very nice for me that everyone should tell me, yes sir, yes sir. That is not the idea. The idea is that this kind of arrangement is required to do any work effectively in this material world. Or anywhere, even in the spiritual world, there are such arrangements. There are groups. The gopis have their group leaders. And under their groups, then there are other groups and they have subgroup leaders. There are various Sanskrit terms for it and all that. We won't get into all that. So it's just a matter of organization. So, in this world also, we need that. To run a country, you need a king. You have to have some law and order, or a prime minister, president, whatever it may be. So the kings in the old days, like King Parikshit, they understood that they were servants of God. But they ruled on behalf of Krishna. And they were just rulers. They didn't rule out of ego. They didn't rule for the sake of some personal sense gratification. They ruled as a service to Krishna, so that dharma would prevail throughout the kingdom. So similarly, in the execution of our duties, if for the sake of the practical, you know, performance of these duties, we need to take a higher position than somebody else, then so be it. But when we are taking that higher position, what should be our consciousness? That is the important point. Okay?
Maharaj, this can also lead to speculation, right? That I may think I'm doing it as a duty, I'm thinking it like this. But on the actual contrary, the material energy is taking over where you act on your own forces.
That is why
nature.
We have to first of all depend on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We have to train ourselves. And as we do that, then gradually Krishna will also give us the intelligence from within. He will give us that wisdom to decide what will be under Maya, what will not be under Maya. Because the mind can deceive us. So therefore Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. For those who are constantly engaged in serving me with faith and devotion, I give them from within the understanding by which they can come to me. So the understanding of what duties you should perform and how you should perform them, and whether you're doing something with the right motive or in the right manner or not, is something that will be revealed to you as you become spiritually more advanced. And at any point of time, we also have to check with Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Whatever we have learned from these three sources, we should try to see if my thoughts and my attitudes are matching that or not. If my motives, my plans are not in conformity with Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, then I can understand it is my material mind that is working. And if we are still confused, we can consult with some senior Vaishnavas to get some guidance. Okay? Alright, it's quite late and it's a working day today, no? Okay, one question here and then last two questions of the day. Okay, last three questions.
Regarding the classification of species, we hear that there are 400,000 human species. Can you explain how exactly the division happens, and it includes the devatas also? How is that?
The question is that in the 400,000 species of humans, how exactly does this classification happen? Srila Prabhupada has mentioned that this happens on the basis of consciousness. Means on the basis of the modes of nature. How the living entities are distributed according to how they are controlled by the different modes. So the devas are under the mode of goodness. Devas are also included in this 400,000 species. They are in the mode of goodness. Then there are others who may not be so much in the mixed mode of goodness and passion. Others may be in passion, some in passion and ignorance. Some very much in ignorance. So it is according to how the human beings are controlled or how they're influenced by the three modes, which determines their consciousness, that ultimately is the basis for this classification. Yes, one question over there.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you spoke of our propensities, and Krishna is the source of all the propensities we have. So what about our anarthas? And you gave the example of fight.
Is Krishna the source of our anarthas also?
I'm just asking. You know, we go through so many anarthas.
What is the difference between the original propensities of Krishna and our anarthas? Anger can become an anartha for us. Anger is existing in Krishna. And anger may become an anartha for us unless we use it purely in Krishna's service. And even then, very carefully. So why, what is an anartha? An anartha is simply a perverted expression of the original propensities that of Krishna that are found in the living entities. So Krishna's anger is all pure, all perfect. But our anger largely is perverted because of a false idea of ourselves and the world. Similarly, Krishna has all the pure greed. But we have impure greed. It becomes tinged with materialism. So there is a perverted reflection of the original pure qualities of Krishna. So the original qualities of Krishna are found in the jiva, but number one, in very, 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 very tiny quantity, because the jiva is just a tiny atomic fractional energy of Krishna. And secondly, they are found in perverted form, distorted form. So it is this distorted form that is called anartha. Okay, yes, one last question here. Your question is that it is said in the Bhagavatam that he is aloof from the creation, but at the same time here it is mentioned that when he does not care for the creation, it ceases to exist. Yes, he's always aloof in the sense that he doesn't actually touch the material creation. He doesn't get involved in the actual management and the overall affairs of the administration of the universe. But he simply decides, now time for creation to get destroyed. Happens. It is based on his desire. But usually he has a schedule. There is a time frame involved. Creation takes so much time. It is sustained for so much time. Then it is destroyed. And then after that, if Krishna wants to wait for a longer period before the next creation, that is up to him. But generally, Krishna will follow a sequence. Creation, maintenance, destruction. Creation, maintenance, destruction. It goes on and on and on and on. So Krishna just wills svabhaviki jnana balakriya. So automatically, just by his thinking, everything happens. All his energies are set in motion. And they are perfectly doing their job. They all know what they are supposed to do. And then they start working and doing the act of creation. Okay? All right. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.